This audio is part of the Pen Machine Podcast at podcast.penmachine.com, also listed at blueberry, blubrry.com.
So, just to warn you, I am recording this, and the reason I'm doing that is so that I can put it on my website later and you can listen to it if you missed anything, or if you want to send it to somebody else or whatever. I will be rather long, obviously, so I'm going to break it into chunks. And I'm not sure how great the sound quality is. This weird white thing is a microphone. It actually does. It theoretically records in all directions, but it's mostly going to get me. I also do recording stuff, so I'll tell you a bit about myself. I'm Derek Miller. So yes, you're at the on-screen editing course. Anybody at the wrong course? No. Okay, good. It seemed like we were on the right track there. I've been a writer and editor in some form for more than 20 years, even though I'm only 37. I was involved with high school newspapers and. Helped start a couple at UBC when I was there. I have a marine biology degree, which I don't use much, and a nonfiction writing diploma, which I sort of use more. I first started doing word processing type stuff in about 1982 on an old Apple II system. I've used word processors on mainframes. I've used nearly every version of Microsoft Word that there's ever been. And I have changed less than you might think. I also work for a software company called, I'll show it to you on the screen here, called Maverick, which is here in Vancouver now by Science World. We make software for ocean shipping companies, web-based software. So I've written this entire website, and I write the daily blog for the company, just interesting stuff that I find useful. I have my own site, as you've seen there before, at penmachine.com. There's a new guitar I bought the other day. I'm also a musician, which is why I have it. Oh, here, I'll scroll it up. I'm also a musician. I work in a crazy 60s cover band called The Neurotics, which plays mostly weddings and corporate events. Down the right side here, you can see various things I'm involved in. Maverick's my company. I run a podcast. You know what a podcast is? Mm-hmm. Basically an internet radio show called Inside Home Recording, which is why I have this weird microphone. I put free music on the internet, which you're welcome to download and use and whatever. My wife has a podcast called Lip Gloss and Laptops, which is strange and popular. I'm involved with the Editors Association of Canada. And there's my other band. There's some photos. I do all that sort of stuff. I've been doing web. I've had this website since about 1997. I've written a blog on here something pretty much every day since late 2000. So there's probably something like 300,000 words worth or more of miscellaneous ramblings on there. And I do a lot of editing on screen. At my work, I'm the main guy that everybody takes everything through before it goes public. So if they write a 120-page proposal to go to Shell Oil, I'm the one who looks over it and formats it up to make sure that it looks right. If they're not sure how a particular error message that is 8 words long should be phrased, they ask me for that too. So it runs that whole range. That's my work. I do this stuff in a whole lot of contexts too. So I guess that's why I'm here. I've run a few seminars on Microsoft Word specifically. I also do some on web editing and things like that. If you actually go up here to the Editors Association link at the top, it gives you, these up here are links to the various seminars, including this one. So you can look at the old ones back there too. And some of them even have audio. My last web editing one, there's an audio transcript of that if you're interested in that stuff. So that's why I'm here. I've wrestled with Word for a very long time. I'm not especially fond of it. And there's a few reasons. If you go down this page, first of all, this is my favorite ever Word message. I came across it. This is an older Mac version that I came across. I don't know. I still don't know what it means. Yes, sorry?
No. You're not signed in.
Oh, sorry, you're not signed in. If you want to sign in, you won't need to. This is what you need to use. So press Control-Alt-Delete and use this wacky info here. So Control-Alt-Delete to log in. And then you need to type this HCC.
How do you turn that to a machine?
Is it not? Is it not? It's not even alive?
Yeah.
Okay. That would be helpful, wouldn't it? That's a good question.
Would be the big del button in front?
Besides the del button.
There we go. Oh, yeah, the black button that's on the black background. Perfect. Okay, so Word cannot edit the unknown. And unfortunately, I will not tell you how to edit the unknown. I just thought that was funny. Down at the bottom of this page, I have a few quotes from... And I'm going to complain about Word a bit at the beginning, and then we'll get into it. But why is it such a pain sometimes? You know, working with Microsoft Word, and in fact with any modern word processor, that it's frustrating because there's just a ton of stuff in there because it's trying to be everything to everyone. And here's why. This Rick Shout is one of the team who's worked on the Mac version of Microsoft Word for more than 15 years. And he says, there's no word processor, including Word, that's perfectly suitable for professional writers since they represent only a small portion of the overall market for word processors. In other words, if you are a professional writer and editor, Microsoft Word is not made for you. It's made for people who, like many of you actually, have writing as a significant part of your job, but it is not your job. So it is designed to do a whole bunch of things for all sorts of different people. What it is not designed to be is an efficient writing and editing tool for people who do that all day long. Unfortunately, it's also almost the only one we've got. So that is an idea. Here's another reason why it's such a pain. This was from last year, but we hired interns this past summer who were younger than Word's code base. What that means is there is programming code inside Microsoft Word that is now in excess of 20 years old. And if you've ever dealt with any kind of computer programming, you know that when you're dealing with code that somebody who may now be dead wrote before you were born, that can be difficult. Because computer code is not, I mean, it's sort of like reading Chaucer. You look at it and you kind of get it, but you don't really understand why they did things the way they did it. And trying to maintain that code and make it work on modern computers and make it interact with all the other stuff that's been built in the intervening 20 years is complicated, and it causes bugs. And it causes, one thing it also causes is strange things in the program that you can't understand why they're there, but they were there for a good reason when they first went in. And there's probably some 0.3% of the Word user base that depends on that stuff being there, even though nobody really wants it to use it. And if Microsoft took it out, those people would scream and yell and cry and complain. And so taking stuff out is difficult when you don't know exactly how people are using it. As evidence of how complicated it's become, here's what it looks like if you turn all of Word's toolbars on. Here is your editing area. Here's everything else. Is it perhaps a little more complicated than it needs to be? Probably. All of these things, some of these duplicate each other, but most of them are actually separate functions that you can perform here. And that's not even looking at what's underneath all the menus, of which there are so many that they've bumped some of the stuff I normally have in my menu bar out of the way. So this is what we're dealing with, and that's, you know, you need to understand that that is an issue and there's a reason. Now, I love this little ode to Word. Even though you, O mighty Word, are licensed to William Smith, I do not mean to type William Smith every time I type Will. You'll notice it does. I actually have a guy named Will Anderson in my address book, and every time I type the word Will, this little yellow thing pops up saying, Will Anderson! I want it, but it's trying to be helpful. And this is another thing a friend of mine, Ryan, who's an architect, said to me once. He said that the problem with programs trying to be smart is that they're not. They're trying to be smart. He's an architect, and he said, well, if I want to use a table on the wall as a door, I should be able to do that because I'm an architect and I'm smart and I should know if I can do that. But if the program is smart and says, sorry, you can't put a table on the wall, all that means is it's limiting in what I can do by trying to be smart. And Word does the same thing. Oh, look, it looks like you're trying to write a letter. Can I help you? No, go away. So how many times, how much time do you spend telling Microsoft Word, no, that's not what I want? Yeah, in fact, there's one bug that has confounded me and still has yet to be, it's gotten better. Back in, I guess, 1995, which I think was Word 6, they introduced the automatic numbering of lists. And I still cannot get it to work the way I want. If you have a list and you're up to number 13, and then you want to start another list that starts at number 1. Sometimes it will, and sometimes it won't. Sometimes it'll go to 14. Sometimes you want it to go to 14, but it decides to start at number 1. Sometimes it decides to be a bullet instead. Sometimes it decides to renumber everything in your whole document as one big long list so that the stuff at the end is number 127. I wish I could tell you how to fix that. I'll show you a few things that might work, but my best advice is undo. As soon as it does that, undo and then try something else, because that seems to be the only way I can consistently fix that. So that's another issue. And then this last one, Joel Spolsky, who's a really smart programmer who now runs his own software in New York City, used to work on Microsoft Excel, which is part of the Office suite. And he said, it's kind of weird, but everything that's happened in Office since about 1995 has been more or less user interface churn. Oh, let's put in the paperclip. Let's take out the paperclip. Or slightly redoing the toolbars, and then you have to do it for every single product. There's all this flotsam that's not actual core functionality of the product, but just crap on top of it. It's good crap, but once you get to 100% crap, so this is his issue with the way Office, and this is part of this whole historical thing. Every time a new version of Office comes around, they seem to change stuff just because. Track changes is a perfect example here. The track changes functionality is basically the same as it has been since they introduced it about 10 years ago. The basic thing that Word is doing is the same. The way you work with it changes every time they release a new version. Which means nobody, if you're looking at how you interact with it, it seems like they're changing it every time, and they're not really. So we'll get to that. So here are the things that I want to cover today, or that I don't want to miss. One is to understand that every Word document has a normal soul and is also a six-layer cake. That will make more sense once I get to it. How to turn off the crap, but turn on the goodies. Sections, paragraphs, and characters are Word's favorite things. What this means is Word doesn't care about pages. We'll get to that. Learn to love styles, if you don't already. Create tables of contents and other things. Use bookmarks, cross-references, and variables. These are all sort of tips, but I find them really useful. Enjoy the views. There are different ways to look at your document. Paste specially. This is a fun one. Just under the bed, comments and track changes. I still don't understand comments that well, but we'll cover it. And set languages and spelling in blobs. I'll show you that a little later. Bonus tips. This is something I'm not sure. There's probably a way to do it in the Windows version. It is in the Mac version. This is where you can select chunks of text that are not actually together, which is very handy and very good. And plain old ASCII is your friend online. This is outside Word. But what I'll just summarize this one. If you're writing email or web pages or anything that's not a Word document, ASCII text, which is the basic, dumb old text that most people deal with on their computers and have for 30 years now, the one without the curly quotes, without the M dashes and the N dashes and the accents and all that stuff, that's the only thing you can be that you can rely on if you're sending text around that's not inside a Word document, if you're putting it on a web page or sending it in an email. Any other characters you put in there, there's a good chance they'll get gorped up somewhere between when you send them and where they go. So that's my last tip there. Okay. On the CD I'm going to give you, there are a bunch of files. You can also find exactly the same files on the website here from the link at the bottom of this page. So when you get the CD, the files that we'll be working with later are on there, and there is also a link to them on the CD, or you can go to penmachine.com/word, which gets you to this page, and the link's at the bottom. So you can always get at these files on the web, even 5 years from now, provided my server doesn't crash. So all this stuff is on the website. Okay, let's get back to our agenda and see where we are. Okay, so let's get some more background about Word. Oh yeah, have you got your sign-in stuff there yet? You don't actually need to do much on the computer. If you want to follow along and try some of the stuff I'm going to be doing, that's great. I'm just going to kind of be rambling on for a while. If you want to do stuff on the computer, great. If not, if you just want to sit there and listen to me ramble, that's fine too. So, we're going to talk a bit more about Word's background. I've done that a bit. I found after, 15 years of working with Word, I finally found a book, which I linked down here, that actually told me what was going on. And it's this one, linked in here, called Word 2000 in a Nutshell. Let me get the U.S. version. If you go to the U.S. site, you can actually inside the book on Amazon's thing. So you click look inside here. And theoretically, you could actually read the whole book on the website, which is annoying, but it works. So it has the whole thing, all this stuff. So anyway, it's Word 2000 in a nutshell. Yes, it's about Word 2000, which is now 6 years old. And there have been, what, four or five versions. Anyway, it gets you through the whole book. What it is it's from O'Reilly, the technical publishing company. And the guy who wrote it essentially said, okay, I'm going to go into what Word is and what it does and why it's that way. And I read through this book and just sucked it right up, because even though it's about a version of Word that's 6 years old, the fundamental concepts that it talks about are still true. And I finally understood some stuff that I'd never gotten before. And the key one about that is, we'll talk about our six-layer cake that I was mentioning before. Or I think it's six layers. It's a layer cake, anyway. If we go down here to the files. There is this picture in here. Now, you might think, looking at a Microsoft Word document, that you sort of imagine it like a piece of paper. You imagine it as this flat thing with some words on it and maybe some pictures and whatever else. But that's not how Word thinks of it. Well, the way a Word document is constructed, from a sort of metaphorical sense, is as this six-layer cake. So what it means is, whenever you have a document that looks like this in Word, you've got six layers going on. The main layer that you're probably mostly working in is this layer number two, called the text layer, sensibly enough. But how often have you had something in Word, a reasonably complicated document, and there's been something that sits on top of or in behind something, and you can't figure out why it's on top of or in behind, and you can't get it to where, or it just keeps blocking what you're trying to do, or you can't get it to come up. Well, this is why. Because in addition to this text layer, there is a drawing layer, if you use the drawing tools in Word, that sits in front of the text layer. And that drawing layer can include text, sensibly enough. If you create a thing like a text box, or they call it frame. As this is one, there's a thing called a frame, which was in old versions of Word, and it's still there because you need to be able to put in those documents, but you're not really supposed to use it anymore. And it can show up in this front drawing layer. Or it could be in the back drawing layer, which is in behind the text. How exactly you get things in the different layers, I'm still not entirely clear. But anyway, this layer exists. Now, in addition to that, there's a whole other section down here that's the headers and footers. So when you create a header or a footer in Word, which can be at the top or bottom of the document, or can actually be as long as the whole page, it's actually in behind everything else. So, for example, if you create, one of the old ways to do a watermark on a Word document was to put it in the header and just put draft or whatever in gray, and it would be behind everything, but it would go across the whole page. So to get rid of that, you'd have to double-click the header and then the big draft thing in the middle and delete it if you wanted to delete it. There are other features to do that now, but you can still run across documents like that. And the header and footer layer is exactly like the rest. It has a text layer and a front drawing layer and a back drawing layer. So theoretically, if you have something that's in the header and footer back drawing layer, there is no way you're going to be able to get it in front of anything else in the document unless you actually cut it and paste it somewhere else. So even though I don't entirely understand, at least as far as I've seen, there's nothing like in Photoshop where you can actually see the layers and move them around or say, no, I want this to go to the back and this to go to the front. I have yet to discover exactly how you move things between these layers, but just knowing that this is what Word is really doing will let you go, ah, okay, now I think I understand why that thing keeps getting stuck behind everything else. So I have a picture, and the text keeps going over top of it, and I want the text to go around it, or I want it to be behind. You can probably copy it and paste it somewhere, and it'll end up in a different layer, and it'll work better for you. So just remember this. There's a link to this image in the files section on the website on the CD I'm going to give you. Front drawing layer, text layer, back drawing layer, header footer front drawing layer, header footer text, and header footer back drawing layer. six layers in any Word document, even if you just say file new and type the word hello, you have all these six layers there. You're just going to be using one of them. So that's good to know. The second thing to know is that every Word document, the thing I said before, that every Word document has a normal soul. And what I mean by that, and again, I really don't understand this completely, but if you're looking at a Word document, it's not, again, it's not just a single file, really. You think of it as a single file that says, you know, .doc, whatever it is, file, .doc, or whatever. That's what, you know, you think of it, and it's got some text on it, and maybe some pictures or whatever. But the thing about it is that it actually sort of has a soul. And what that soul is this file that you might have seen before, the name of which, you've only ever seen it in error messages or pop-ups, called normal, or normal.dot, for document template. And this is a file that lives somewhere on your computer. It depends on what kind of computer you have and which operating system you've got as to where this actually resides. But when you install Word, it installs this file called normal.doc. And it is a Word document template. It's basically a normal Word document that's set as a template that you can't actually, that normally when you open it, you can't edit it right away. It makes a new file. And in that is a whole bunch of the generic information about what a plain old Word document you create from scratch is going to do. What fonts it's going to include. So when you start typing, is it Times New Roman or is it something else? That's in here. When you do a first level heading, how big is it? Is it bold? What font is that in? What are the margins? That's in here. In different versions of Word, sometimes even the toolbar settings and other things like that are stored inside this normal.doc file. And if you sit down at a version of Word that's really screwed up, that, you know, you try and type something and it comes up a really weird font, nothing really works, what you can do is you can actually hunt and delete that file, and Word will make a new one that's the generic one that it would have had when it installed itself. And let's see if I can figure out how to do that on here. Now, if you're using Windows, you can actually just go to search, start search for files or folders. And depending on which version of Windows you have, it could be, okay, and in this case, we're going to press all, I'm going to say all files or folders. And I'm going to say I'm looking for the file called normal.dot. And it will churn away for a while. And with any luck, it'll find something. It may take a while. But if you find that, now, rather than deleting it, what you can do is drag it to the desktop and give it a different name or something like that, so you have that one. And next time you launch Word, it will create a new generic version of this normal template. And anytime you create a new file, Word looks at this normal.doc file and uses that as the basis for the file you create. Now, it gets more complicated than that, unfortunately. This is the way a normal file will work, but once you start working it, theoretically you can change what the soul of that document is. It doesn't seem to be finding it on my machine, but whatever. Probably because I'm looking in too many places. But when you're in Word, notice it's taken me 40 minutes before I actually launched the program we're talking about. Okay, so we're in Word here, and if you make some changes to... Oh, jeez, this is different from what I'm used to. Anyway. I'll figure it out later as to how this works. Anyway, if you start changing what the styles are in a document, for example, the things that change the fonts, there is a little checkbox often in there that says add to template. So for example, if you change a level 1 heading from Times New Roman 24 point bold to Arial 32 point bold underlined in a style, and you say apply the template, what that does is that saves that style sort of in the background to the template of this file. Now that, and that sort of travels with the file while you move it around. So if somebody else opens that document on another computer, they will also see the headline in the proper font, and if they apply that style, it will be in the style that you be the Arial 32 point bold underline that you did. So when you make a change in a style, and we'll get to some of that later, in Word, you can choose to include that in the soul of the document, or you can just make it sort of the change that you do. What this leads to, and the reason it's an issue, is that typically, and this is something that happens to me all the time, you will create, say, what I do is a proposal. And I base that proposal on the last proposal we did. So I open up the last proposal we did, and I change stuff, and then I save that again. But, you know, maybe I mock stuff around. And over several generations, you can end up with this associated template soul file in here that's got a whole bunch of weird changes to the various styles. And so when you try to go do something and say, okay, well, I want to make a bulleted list, sometimes then the bullets sudden magically into infinity signs or strange characters that you weren't expecting because it has several generations of changes that have occurred to this file. And the styles and various other things have gone through a bunch of permutations, and it doesn't—it sort of doesn't know where it came from anymore. So that all comes out of the fact that each document, it has an associated template, and a lot of the time when you start off, that template is the normal .dot file on your computer. That's really confusing.
Same way if you take a file and put on somebody else's computer, and it's all.
Well, to a degree it can be, because if it's, if the document you have is referring, it has its own sort of styles and formatting in there, but anything that isn't specific to that document, it will refer to the normal dot dot file. And if the one on the computer you take it to, so say you've changed the headings and you've changed a few other things, but most of your document is just in the normal style, and you haven't done anything to that on your machine. If somebody else has on their machine, when you take it to their machine, it might look and say, okay, I'm going to look at the normal dot dot template, and oh, it's in, you know, the normal font is 3-point Palatino. So you open up that document, and it looks totally weird, because it said, well, normal is this normal that they've made on this machine, and that's where this problem is coming. Now, again, a lot of the things I'm going to be talking about, there may not be a particular tip I can give you to address that specific situation, but knowing that this file and your file have styles and stuff that are intermingling from a bunch of templates that sort of exist there as souls in the background gives you something, gives you a bit of understanding that lets you go, okay, well, maybe I can figure out a way around this. My typical way that I might often do this is if you select the entire document, copy it, make a new document and paste it in the new document, sometimes that fixes a whole bunch of stuff. Even though all you're doing is copying and pasting the exact same content. Weird, but sometimes it works. Okay, so let's get back to our outline here and see what we're talking about. Alright, so I'm actually going to go to number 3 first, which is sections, paragraphs, and characters. When you create a new Word document, what you have, let's go back to Word here. And I type a single character, A. So that's about as simple a Word document you could have. As I said, it's got 6 layers. It's referring to this normal template. It probably has its own template associated with this file when you send it around. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on here. But the key thing to know here is that Word, as I said, doesn't care about pages. Word doesn't think in pages, and in fact, for the longest time, back in the 80s and 90s, this was really the only way you could look at a Word document, was without any kind of page representation at all. It was just a long, scrolling document. And that is still the way that Word, and actually most word processors, think of things, because if you change what printer you're using, or you change the margins, or you do anything else, that totally changes how the pagination works. Sometimes to your detriment. But what Word thinks of is really in terms of three things. And those are sections, paragraphs, and characters. So in a Word document, in this Word document, we have all three of those things. This letter A here, this document is a single section with a single paragraph and a single character. But Word is looking at all of those things. So a character, reasonably enough, is one of these things. So it can be a letter, number, weird symbol. In fact, if you paste an image in line into your document, it treats that as a character. If you're not pasting it into the sort of graphics layer where you can manipulate it around, if you just say, you know, say you're in another program, you copy a photograph of somebody and you paste it in here where the cursor is, it treats that as a character, like a letter. And you can highlight it and you can copy and paste it and you can move it around. So there are characters. That character lives in a paragraph, and one of the things I typically advise is, where are our toolbars? Formatting. Where's our paragraph marker thing? Okay, there, that's what I want. I typically like to leave this paragraph marker thing turned on, because that ends up being important. Because within this, let's make another paragraph. Okay, now we have two paragraphs. And if you have the paragraph display turned on, it puts this paragraph symbol at the end of every paragraph. That's important, because how many of you have had a long Word document where you copy several paragraphs worth of stuff and you paste it somewhere else, and the formatting changes? Yes, Celia. So you paste it somewhere, and suddenly it takes on the formatting of where you pasted it, which is not what you wanted. Or conversely, you paste something, and where you paste it suddenly all changes into what the same formatting that you're pasting in, and you don't know why. Well, I'll tell you why. Because all the formatting of a paragraph is stored in this paragraph marker at the end of the paragraph. You can actually, as you notice, I selected that without actually selecting anything in the paragraph. So there are basically two kinds of formatting Word. There's character formatting, which applies to individual characters. So you can make an individual character italic, for example. Or you can make a series of them italic, but it's sort of like applying that to each individual character. And there's paragraph formatting, which applies to the whole paragraph. So that deals with things like margins. And a lot of the styles, like if you're in the middle of a paragraph and you apply a headline style to it, like say, let's try it here. I go blah, 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 I've got something here. And I'm in the middle of a paragraph and I click heading one. The whole thing changes because that's a paragraph style. And in fact, if you look over here in the style menu, if you look at all the styles that are available, you can see that some of the styles, these ones, with a little A next to them, those are character styles. Here. So it's got a little letter, that's a character style, and if you apply that, it will only apply to the character or characters you have highlighted. Paragraph style will apply to everything in the current paragraph. In other words, it really applies to this invisible, most of the time, paragraph marker at the end of the paragraph. And the reason I recommend leaving this displayed on, even if you don't display any of the other hidden things, is that that will show you whether you've selected it or not. So that will tell you, you know, if I want to copy and paste this, if I only want to copy and paste the text, and usually it gets it automatically, but say I only want to copy and paste this. No, I don't want that last one. See, it's trying to be helpful again. Okay, so I've highlighted everything except the paragraph marker. If I go edit, copy, and then I paste that in here, edit, paste, notice that it didn't bring the formatting with it. On the other hand, if I grab these and the paragraph marker, edit, copy, and then paste it in here, paste, it pastes in all the formatting because I brought the paragraph marker with me. Yes, and changed my other one as well. I don't know quite why that's so, but anyway. Well, yeah, I changed my other one because that's part of the same paragraph that I pasted it into.
So if you were to delete that paragraph marker, would that...
Let's find out. No, what it did is it actually sucked that into it applied that to the next paragraph. But if you do it a slightly different way, does that work? No. If I were to go down here and base, well, that still doesn't work. There's a way to do it. I just can't think of it offhand. But essentially, if you think of all the paragraph formatting as being stored in that paragraph end mark, that helps you a lot. Because then when you're copying and pasting, you know whether you're copying and pasting all those paragraph styles. And the other way to look at it is the paragraph style is the basic, that's the basic style of any chunk of text, and the character styles usually go on top of that. So within a paragraph, you can make things italic or boldface or blue or a link or any of these other things. And that applies on top of the paragraph style. And if you copy and paste the text without the paragraph marker, those other character styles will flow through. So, as an example here, if I... actually, I already had it in a place where I could do... How do I redo? Oh, of course. This is one of the things I'm going to recommend turning off, which is the two smart menus. So, format, styles... So, let's say I'm going to pick a character style like this that's got italic in the middle. If I now take this chunk of text and copy and paste it, you'll notice that the IZ is still italic, even though it hasn't taken the paragraph style with it. So character styles will go with the characters that they're in, and paragraph styles will only go with that paragraph marker. So in fact, the best thing to think of is, it's not really the text at all, it's just this thing at the end of the paragraph that you're moving, and whether the text comes along is sort of your choice. So what happens if I just do this? I pasted just the paragraph marker and it actually moved the whole style there. I didn't do any of the text at all. So that's possible to do. So that's a good thing to know. And sections, again. When you work with Word, you can do a page break, and all that is a pure formatting thing. That will make the next page. The Word doesn't really care. All that's saying is, well, if you're in the middle of a page, go to the next one. You can make a section break of any type. So if you're in a Word document and you want to make a new section, you go insert break, and it gives you a lot of choices. Page break, column break, text wrapping break, all sorts of things like that. But section breaks, you can have a section break that goes to the next page, a section break that continues on the same page, a section break that forces the next page to be on an even page or an odd page. But each of those section breaks, what that enables you to do is every section in a Word document can have its own headers and footers. That's the usual main thing. And you can restart numbering at new sections. So you can have, you know, section 2-1 for the first page of the second section. The sections let you divide a document up into chunks. And often that's very handy if, for example, you don't want the first page to have page numbers on it because it's a title page. You do that without anything in the headers and footers. And then you create a new section. And in that one, you add some headers and footers with page numbers, and the first page doesn't have that. I used to do that, before I understood this, what I used to do is I would use the drawing tools and I would make a white rectangle, which I would paste over the footer so that you couldn't see it, but it was still there. That was my thing before I figured out sections. Now, they were there. Sections have been there almost since the beginning, but I didn't get that. So that's an easier way. In fact, that's something I started doing in PageMaker as a layout program. I'm sure there was a way to get around that, too. The other thing I'd like to emphasize is that's okay. If you find some weird technique like that that works for you, and you can use it consistently, and you really don't expect anybody else to be working with your document and trying to figure out what you're doing, that's fine. But it's better to use the tools that exist in there for those who might understand them. Now, on the other hand, some of the tools, like track changes, you might have to use, and nobody really understands them. And there would probably be better ways of doing them, and that's sometimes when I recommend using paper. Because I still do use paper a lot. And I'll get to that as well. So, the turn off the crap, I'm going to deal with that a little bit later, but... Learning to love styles. How many of you use styles in Word religiously? Yes? How many of you even know what I'm talking about? You know what a style is in Word? Yeah. Okay. This is something that I didn't do for the longest time. You know, typically, and this is one of the places where Word really falls down, even in the role that it's designed for. It's designed for people who are just doing writing all the time. It never really makes it that easy for you to use styles, even though that's what you should do almost all the time. Typically, if you sit down at a Word document, or this is the first time you've ever used Word, you sit down, you start typing, and you say, oh, I want to hit it. So you grab a bunch of text, and you make it bold-faced, and you make it big, and whatever. And then you go down, you want another heading, and you grab that chunk of text, and you make it bold-faced, and whatever size. And maybe you forgot what you did, so you make it slightly different size, and whatever else. And then somebody else has to come back and edit your document. And it's basically all in one style, with a bunch of formatting applied to it, that, you know, now they want to try and apply it to, they want to try and change those styles to meet the corporate standard or whatever, and they have to go through the whole document and fix it all up. This is why I met with a book designer once, and he said, I want you to send your files to me as plain text files. I don't even want Word documents. I want a TXT file. In fact, you don't even have to have curly quotes in there or anything. Just send me the plain text, because I don't want to deal with all the crap that you've put in there. I'm going to format it up the way that I know how to do it, because it's more work to try and fix up a Word document than it is. Usually, it's more work to do that than it would be to just start over with the plain text and mark it up again, because there's more stuff to undo. What you should be doing when you're writing a Word document... Let's close this one. Oh, that's not what I wanted to close. No. So let's make a new document. Blank document. Okay. So when you make a new document, really what you should be using is this menu up here. So if you're typing, say, I want a level one heading, I want to type, this is a level one heading. Now, you notice what happened there. It gave me a level one heading. As soon as I hit return, it started typing in normal text. Isn't that nice? That's because the way the headings are set up is that at the end of the paragraph, there's actually a thing in there that says, well, what should I do when you get to the end of the paragraph? Should I keep going in this style, or should I go to some other style? And if you go to, here is the actual, sorry, format, styles and formatting. Now, I'm used to Word 2000 and Word on the Mac. It actually comes up with a dialog box here instead of this sidebar thing. But anyway, any of these... So here are the styles, and it says these are available formatting. If you click at the bottom, you can actually say all styles, and it'll show you everything. Now, these are the type of things that I was talking about in this normal template. When Word gets installed, it has a normal template that has all these styles defined in. And there's actually dozens and dozens of them, and all sorts of strange slurs. So body text, headings down to level 9. I don't know. If you're ever working on a document and you get to a 9th level heading, it's time to start over. I can't imagine. I mean, other than the manual for the 747 that they don't use this document for, I don't think 9th level headings are useful. So there's a whole ton of these things in here, and they're all defined as a certain font at a certain size with certain margins and all that. And so chances are, when you create a document, there's going to be one of these styles that would be useful for whatever you're doing at the moment. And what I'm talking here is, generally, I'm talking about paragraph styles. So headings, bulleted lists, your main body paragraphs, table, the contents inside tables, tables of contents themselves, so the actual table of contents areas, various sorts of things, the headers, the footers, they all have styles. And by default, they all use a certain style. But when you start typing in a Word document, typically... I can't type anymore. There we go. By default, the main text is called normal. This is not the same as normal dot dot, unfortunately. It's the same name, but it's a totally different thing. This is basically the default style inside that normal template. This is, unless you do anything else, this is what you're going to be typing in Word. I personally prefer not to use this. When I'm typing in a I want to use something like body text, which actually usually looks exactly the same. But the thing about that is that if... Let's try... I'm just going to type something up. This is a level 2 heading. Hello. Again. Okay. So I go up here and I say, well, it's a level 2 heading. I'm going to go up to up here. And see, it's got this huge long list. You can always just type it in, too. I go heading 2, magazine level 2 heading. Okay, so if I apply my styles like this, and say I do that over and over again, so I type a huge long document that's all like this, and it just goes on and on. With any luck, it's more sensible than this, but say I have that. Now, if I go over here to the heading section, and I click on this little arrow on here, depending on which version of Word you're using, this might be inside a dialog box or whatever else it is, but basically if you go format, styles, and formatting, at some point you'll be able to modify heading 2. I clicked on this arrow, or I could right-click on it and say modify. And it brings up this dialog box, which is what hasn't changed in years and years. So it tells you a whole bunch of things about this style that are really interesting, and this is why styles are useful. The name of the style, what kind of style it is. So if you create a new one, you can define whether it's for a paragraph style or whatever. What is it based on? So here's a nice thing. For example, if you can set up your heading styles so that your level 4 heading is based on your level 3 heading, which is based on your level 2 heading, which is based on your level 1 heading. So that if you decide to change the font of the level 1 heading, and all the other headings are based on that, the font, so you decide, well, I don't like Arial anymore, I got this new font that's super font scheme, then all those headings, all the way down the line, right to heading 4 or 9 or whatever, will all change into that font, but at the different sizes you've set. So you could do that, for example. But here, this one's based on normal. I could say, well, no, I want to base it on heading 1. And then any time I change anything in heading 1 that isn't specified in here, it isn't specified separately inside this style, that will change when I change heading 1 as well. So it sort of cascades through the styles. A little bit confusing, I know. And here's the part I was talking about before, style for the following paragraph, normal. So a heading style, this makes sense. But what I would do typically is I would say, oh no, I want that to be body text. So now, if I were to type a level 1 heading and hit return, I would get the body text style after it. And look at the body text style over here. It's based on normal, but it has a few changes, some space after and whatever. And the style for the following paragraph is also body text. So if you're in body text and you hit return, you're still in the same style as you go down. So different styles for different purposes will work differently. But what you can do here is you can create a sort of generic document. Set up a bunch of these things you might want to do, headings, bulleted lists, body texts, indent paragraphs, whatever else. Set them all up exactly the way you want them. And then you say file, save as, and you make it a Word template, document template. And you can save it. There's a templates folder that it would normally put it in. You can save it on your desktop. You can do whatever. And if you open that template file, you will start with your brand new document with all these things defined the way you want them. And then you can go on and start working. The nice thing about that is that, say, I decide, okay, I don't like this level 1 heading anymore. I want to say, I want to change this style to, I want to change what that looks like. I'm going to go over here and say modify. And if you go down to this format menu down here, you can change a whole bunch of things about that. I want to say, okay, well, I don't like Arial anymore. I want it to be Gil Sans Ultra Bold. I'm going to be ridiculous here. 72-point italic strike through. I don't know. Let's try something else. Shadow. That doesn't even look like the outline. There we go. I go okay. Now this is that part I was talking about before. See this add to template? This will add it to the soul of this particular document so that anytime you use this style in the future, it will be what you're defining here. If you don't do this, when you send the file to somebody else, they might not get the same formatting that you've set up. So this is a wise thing to do when you're setting up a template. Again, I'm still not entirely clear on exactly when this does things and when it doesn't. I sort of have to muck around with it. And unfortunately, this is what we get a lot. But let's say, okay, the other thing is automatically update. Do not check this box. Because what this does is, you, for any given style, you can make it so that okay, if I decide to change on the fly editing a document, if you check this, if you later decide, okay, well, I'm going to make this not italic and resize it and whatever, it will change all the other headings that are in that style, all the other paragraphs in that style, as soon as you make the change. So what that means is as you're editing your document, you're changing stuff about other parts of the document you can't even see right now, and you discover later on that that style, you ended up automatically updating it when you didn't want to. So I always uncheck this, because I hate it doing that. But anyway, if I say okay here now, you've noticed that all my level one headings have now turned into this monster font through the entire document. Now, if you change that to one that was actually attractive, that would be useful. But you've also noticed that the level two headings, they've also changed to outline, but because I defined the font separately for the level two heading, it kept the font that I told it to be, but it sucked all the other stuff and the size as well, but it sucked the other formatting out of the level one, because remember where I said it was based on level one? So you can do, what I would recommend is that you start playing around with this. Sit down, create a new document, save it as a template, and try to make that the official template that you like to use all the time. And you make all the stuff in there the way you like it. Because the generic way that Word is set up, the default template, isn't that great. I mean, Times New Roman is actually not a very attractive font on the screen. So maybe you want to pick something else that's easier for you to read. And you want to make the headings more different from one another, so that you can tell on site whether it's level one or whatever else. Yes.
If you saved it as a template, if you just named it normal dots,
yeah.
So it would overwrite the normal.
Then that would be what.
It would be every single document.
Every single document you ever started in your Word would start that way.
Okay.
So that is a good thing. I wouldn't recommend just overwriting the one that's there. What I would recommend doing is setting up this default template that you like, you know, on the desktop or whatever. And then when you've got it exactly the way you like it or close enough, then find the normal dot dot template, rename it to something else, usually as a safety valve, because you can always bring it back, and then save the one you have as your new normal. And then whenever you go file new, you'll get your template instead of the generic Word one. And that can be very handy. I've done that for work, so that I mean, have the essentially generic version of our official, you know, we have official fonts that we use and whatever else, and they're all in there, so that I don't have to change it every time. Unfortunately, when people send me documents, sometimes they've got embedded formatting that I have to change all over again. I'll show you some tips and tricks about that later. But anyway, styles are your friend. If you can use particularly paragraph styles, I don't really care. I mean, if you're just making something italic, I just do Control I and make it italic. But for example, if you have something like you have a particular style when you're writing a web address, that you have one in a certain font or whatever, if you have a character style that applies to that, then if you just change your mind later and you want those all to look different, you can do that. The other nice thing you can do over here is if you click on this, see where it says select all 9 instances? Now it's actually highlighted every single time that that style appears in the entire document. So you can see they're all highlighted. So I could actually change them all to body text, just like that. And that wasn't even changing the style, that was just applying a different style to all those things. And in fact, you can do that. Where is it even in here? You can do that by finding multiple instances of something. So if you have one of those documents where everything's kind of screwed up and they didn't use styles, if you say, well, I want to find. Let me show you how this works, because it's pretty cool. If I can figure out where the find is. Control F, is that it? Yeah. So find and replace. If I find, if I click this more button in the find window, it gives me an option to find formatting. Not just to find text, but to find any text that's in a certain format. So say I want to find anything in the document that is in Times New Roman. So if you notice, what it's saying here is, it says, find what? Find nothing or anything in the font Times New Roman. So when I click find, and then I check this, highlight all items found in main document. You can also tune, well, if you have headers and footers, you can find things just in the headers and footers, for example. But highlight all items, find all. Now, interesting thing here is it's found, these are all in a different font right now. It has found all the spaces in between here that are all in Times New Roman. So I've actually searched for a space because I had a space there. That's not quite what I meant to do. Let's try that again. Okay, so if you have nothing there, it'll find... Why is that? Okay, I'm confused now. It should only find things in that font, and I don't know what it's done there. But anyway, you can find... Say you find... I guess, oh yeah, that probably
is. Based on level one.
Yeah, but it's in a different font, so it shouldn't be highlighting it. But anyway, if you play around with this, you can find different chunks of the document that it will select all at once, and you can change them all at once into something else. You can turn them into a style. So if you've got somebody who's made all their headlines Arial, but they didn't actually make them styled, you just find all the instances of Arial in the document, and then you say, turn those all into heading one. And it just does it. So it's a good way to fix up something like that. Again, these are all just emphasizing that styles are your friend. And so when you're working with documents in Word, I recommend you use paragraph styles in particular as much as you can, because what that gives you the flexibility to do is to go back later and change the formatting without having to go through the entire document to do it. You can say, okay, you know, these people want everything in Courier New. Because, well, one thing I remember is that it used to be that if you were submitting some sort of legislative brief to the United States government, it had to be in Courier. It had to look like it was on a typewriter, even though it wasn't. So if you had written a document in Times New Roman, they wouldn't even accept it if it wasn't in Courier. I think they've now changed it so that it has to be in Times New Roman, which still is ugly, but whatever. So they have these very specific formatting requirements, so that, you know, a bill or a draft or a law or whatever. So if you went through the whole document and had to change particular instances, that would suck. But if you just said, okay, I'm going to change all my body text to Courier, you're done. So that's great. Okay, so what time are we at? 10:15. Okay, we're rolling on. So the other thing that's worth knowing about is the views, and I showed you these already. Word has a whole bunch of different ways of looking at the document. And here is the third occasion of the word normal. Again, we're talking about a different normal. This is our third normal, again, totally unrelated to the other two normals. We have the normal template. And if you're on a Mac, it's not normal dot dot, it's just called normal. We have the normal template, which defines what a generic document is going to look like. We have the normal style, which, when you have a generic document, it is the basic style on which all other styles are based. And we have the normal view, which is none of those things. This is the view that Word had for the longest time. And the only way you could see what your pages would look like is if you did a print preview and it showed you where the pages would break and what the pages would actually look like with the margins. So normal is just a big, long, continuous scrolling document like we've got here. And it does show you where the pages break, but only with a line like this. Oop. This is actually a good view to work in if you're writing or editing a document and you don't want to think about how many pages it is or what the margins are like. You can get as much of the text on the screen as possible. And in fact, if you go normal and go view full screen, then you got a lot to work with. You can just keep typing and typing, and you don't see any of the formatting bars or anything else. Not so good for applying styles, but if you're just writing and you're not doing anything about the styles except maybe italics and bold, that's a good view to look at. The one you're probably more used to is the print layout, because this is the way it usually comes now when you start up Word. And it does show you the edges of the pages, and when you get to a bottom of a page, you see the divisions, and you can zoom in and out the different... So you can zoom and say, well, I want the whole page on screen like that. So this is page view, and it shows you what it should look like when you print it out, and usually it's pretty accurately stated. Now what's interesting is that there's still a print preview. File, print preview. Now, why? That's my question, because I mean, I guess there's some stuff that's different in the print preview than there is in the print view. But the reason I think this exists is because this used to be the only way to see this. And now there's a view that'll show you that, but they didn't take it away because there'd be people who complain if they don't have a print preview anymore. And there are some things that are slightly different. If they were starting from scratch, they would probably have a print view that was the same as the print preview. But in this case, well, I can't edit this because it's the preview, but I can edit this because it's the print view. Okay, whatever. Some other views that are available. Reading layout. So this, I suppose, would be if you're proofreading it or trying to read it out. This is the first time I've ever seen this view, so do you have a suggestion for...
No, they just put this in recently to make it... It's explaining it to make it feel like you're reading a book.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, everybody wants to read a book on a screen.
Yeah.
But I suppose if you had a tablet and you were reading a book this way, this would be... You know, and it gives you the total number of screens that you're going to be going through, and presumably there's some way to bookmark where you are or whatever, I don't know. But anyway, that's one. Web layout. I recommend you not use this because do not use Microsoft Word to build web pages. As somebody who builds web pages for a living, the web pages that Microsoft Word builds are awful because they aren't really... The code that they generate in order to make the web page is atrocious. And it also doesn't display consistently across different people's machines. If you have an old machine, if you have a Mac, if you have some other weird device, if you use a different browser like Firefox that I'm using on here, what Word generates will not necessarily look consistent between them. There are other tools that are better for building web pages. I mean, quick and dirty, yeah, if you really want to do a web page this way, you can. I'd actually rather you print a PDF and put it on the website most of the time because you're making a Word document. It's a word processor. It is not a web page editor. And I wish they'd never tried to make it one. But what this does let you do is, for example, you can open a web page in Word and then use that as the basis for a document. So you can actually go, I can go open, see if this works right out of here. Don't mind. Yeah. So, well, you can see what it did with my web page, but it actually opened my web page as a document with all the stuff in it. It doesn't have the proper layout to it. But
so could you edit that now?
I can edit that, and then I can go File, Save As, Desktop, and I would say Pen Machine. In fact, I could even save it as a Word document, penmachine.doc, and then it says some of the stuff's not going to work properly, and I say that's fine. Now, on the desktop, I have this document, which is now my web page, but it's a Word document. So that's the one useful thing you can do with this, is you can actually open a web page and ideally strip out a bunch of the other stuff and just take the text that you wanted, rather than having to copy and paste it off the website. You can get some of this here. Now, as you can see, it's kind of dog's breakfast, but some of it works okay. It's not something I recommend doing very much, but this is useful for some things, and especially very basic web pages that you want to turn into a Word document or a PDF or something else. That's useful for that, but that's about all I've ever thought of useful for. And are there any other... Oh, outline. This is useful. There are better dedicated outline tools available, but if you like to construct the outline of your document before you actually write it, this is actually a useful way to do it. And the other thing it lets you do is if you close, you can double click on these various elements and you can actually move different sections around really easily. So if you want to reorganize your document, the outline view is quite handy for that. Now it's gotten really confused. So you can see this is the print layout. But I actually moved this into a different place when I did that. So that's kind of neat. So these are a useful thing. But generally, for the most part, you're working in print layout or normal or outline. Reading layout, web layout, not so useful. If you're on Mac, there's actually a view called Notebook View. which actually looks like lined paper. And it's designed for very quickly taking notes and sort of like you would do in class. And in fact, on Windows, they have a separate program called OneNote. Does anybody use that? It's actually designed for tablet PCs where you can actually write right on the screen and it'll interpret stuff. It's a similar thing. So on the Mac, there's yet another view, which is like, sort of like OneNote is on Windows. And it's useful for actually sitting down and taking notes. And in fact, I'm using it on the MacBook here. It has a, on the Mac, the notebook view lets you record audio. So I'm actually recording my audio in Word, and then I will export it to put it on the website later. So that's kind of a neat thing you can do, and that's a different view that's only on the Mac version and is slightly different. So we're at 10:25. Let me see if there's anything else I'm going to cover before 10:30 here. Paste special. I'm going to show you that now. I was going to show it to you later, but I love this so much. Okay, so you get your dog's breakfast document here like this. This is actually a perfect example of a really nasty document. Okay, so you get a document like this, and somebody says, can you edit this up for me? And you go, oh, my God. It is just, you know, it's... This is a bad example because it's taken from a web page, but say they just give you one of these ones where they've applied all sorts of different formatting, and there's no style, and you try and do stuff, and the numbering goes all weird and everything else, and you just go, oh, my God, forget it. Well, what I do is I go, edit, select all, and I copy it. And then I create a new document. And I'm going to go back to... Actually, let's zoom this. To TextWave. Okay. And then what I do is, this is my favorite thing. When I discovered this, I almost cried. You do paste special. And what it gives you a little menu. It's saying, what do you want me to paste? Do you want me to paste this... You can actually paste one document inside another. I don't know when that would ever be good. Formatted text, picture, HTML, all sorts of stuff. This is the one, unformatted text. So edit, paste special, unformatted text. And there we go. So what I've done there is it's got a whole bunch of stuff, but this is just the text. It doesn't have any styles. It doesn't have any formatting. It doesn't have any italics. All it did is it pasted the plain old text for document that I copied into a... what's the thing that actually lets me zoom? There we go. So... So if you look at this, now it's just plain text. It's still a mess, but now none of that formatting weirdness is there, and I can just start over. And I use this all the time. So if I get a document, or if I'm copying out of a web page, or if I'm copying out of another document, just a single paragraph, and I'm pasting it in somewhere in my document, I use edit, paste special, unformatted text, and then it takes on the formatting of whatever I'm pasting it into. So if you get some paragraph that's... Because typically, if you copy and paste from a website, usually it tries to match whatever wacky fonts on the website when you paste it into Word, which is not what you want. If you paste special and paste unformatted, it just takes the text and dumps it in there, and then it takes on the formatting or whatever you got, and then you can fix it up after that. So in this case, I've done it for an entire document. That's an extreme case, but it's great even for just little chunks of text. Even just, you know, three words, or if you're, you know, you've copied somebody's name out of an email message because it's a very long and complicated name and you don't want to have to retype it, or even their email address, and then when you paste it like this into Word, it won't bring all that formatting from the email with it. Very useful. I use this all the time. And I don't know why it's not better known, because among editors, that's a fabulous thing. So I'm going to leave it at that for right now. We're going to take a break for 20 minutes. So we will come back at 2:15. And apparently they have coffee and stuff for us downstairs. So if we go in the elevator and down to the whatever it was. Did she say third floor? Okay. So apparently if we go to the third floor, which is another place I'm not sure I've ever been, and then go to the right, once we get out of the elevator, there will be stuff there for us. If you want to leave your stuff here, that's fine. I have the key, so the door will lock. Is anybody going to stay in here? Good, because this is not a place you want to stay unless you have. And as always, if you have questions, you can ask them to me now, but wait till we come back, because then everybody can hear them. Unless you have questions about something that's not this. And we'll move on. Our next section will be, just to warn you, that's back at our agenda here. Quick and dirty editing tips. So more of this, I was going to put that paste special tip in the next section, so we'll do more of that sort of stuff next.